Typically, a great deal of effort is made to recreate life so that the story that's told on stage is believable. You might think actors carry the lion's share of that burden, but there's a lot more to creating the illusion of life than thespianship. There's the stage set, there's lighting, there's the writing of the dialogue itself, which needs to sound like the way people speak. But there are other aspects of stagecraft that also contribute to the illusion of life on stage. Sheila Raghavendran reports.
So what you have to imagine is that there's a character on her knees and a man comes up behind her, grabs her by the head and twists her neck. And then you want to hear a nasty snapping sound when her neck is twisted.
Andrew Hobson was the sound designer for IU Theatre's production of The Duchess of Malfi, a 17th century British tragedy written by John Webster. Andrew teaches sound design at IU. The play is known for its violent deaths, including a neck break.
Knowing what a broken neck sounds like, well, I think we have to extrapolate a little bit. We break a stick. You kind of get the idea of what that might sound like.
Few of us, thankfully, know what a neck breaking sounds like, which made Andrew's job, presumably, a little easier. He needed only to suggest, not completely describe, that action. To decide how to recreate the neck break sound, Andrew says he tested several objects.
The cast was experimenting with carrots when I came into the process, and it was pretty underwhelming. It sounded like a carrot breaking. So I sort of drew on what my personal experience, plus I also contacted all my sound designer friends, and we just got back a raft of responses. The most popular choices, though, were lasagna noodles, plastic cups, and pencils and chopsticks. So we experimented with all of those, and we ended up with some stuff we like.
It was these few simple props that yielded the best neck-breaking sound effects. Listen for yourself. That was the chopstick. And the cup. And those were lasagna noodles. This process of replicating sounds is called Foley Arts.
Foley Arts were originally developed for radio plays, where they would not be able to go to a location to get the sound effect they're looking for, but they learned how to reproduce the sound in the studios. A lot of it was involved specialized equipment, such as doors just built into frames that they could open and close to create the door sound effects, or just taking a pair of shoes and walking on the top of the desk to make footstep noises. Later on, it moved into film, and in post-production, the Foley artists would actually watch the film as it's being played, and they would make the sound effects in time to the image on the screen.
Andrew ultimately chose a pencil for the neck break sound. It sounded like a chopstick, only firmer, which may have more accurately suggested the snapping of bone and tendon.
In Duchess of Malfi, we wanted a very directional sound coming from a very specific place, and it had to happen at exactly the right time. So it was in a place where we couldn't hide a speaker, and we thought it would be more visceral if the sound was being triggered by an actor and it was a real sound rather than a recorded sound.
Creating sounds to enhance the play's believability is just one aspect of stagecraft. Bringing life to a theatrical production also involves appealing to the audience's visual and tactile senses. This is where special effects come in. In The Duchess of Malfi, the murders needed to look as gruesome as they sounded. Costume designer Emmy Phelps' best approximation for blood turned out to be
watered-down chocolate gravy.
Emmy got the recipe from an article called Outdamned Spot, published by the U.S. Institute for Theater Technology. USITT is an organization for theater design and technology practitioners. It provides educational information and a space for its members to connect. The recipe Emmy found was recommended for its washability and realistic look.
The blood is made out of cornstarch, corn syrup, white corn syrup, food coloring, and a little bit of chocolate. And it's kind of like equal parts of all of them, and then you mix it all together, and it kind of dries hard like real blood.
In choosing a blood recipe, Emmy considered not only the way the fake blood looks, but how the actors needed to interact with it.
The rule of thumb before I found this recipe was a recipe that uses Dawn dish soap, but it doesn't dry on stage. It stays kind of tacky. So it just depends on like if the blood is being eaten, it needs to be edible, which this gets in somebody's face, so it has to be edible. It's sweet because of the corn syrup, but actually has a little bit of powdered cocoa in it, so it tastes like chocolate, which is good for the actors. You just kind of have to determine like what you need your blood to look like on stage. And for this, we needed the most realistic looking stuff possible and to dry the most realistic as possible.
Emmy says that creating this realistic visual effect was challenging. She went through an extensive trial and error process before finding the perfect blood concoction.
The first night, it just looked too like dark and purple. And so we had to go back and completely like redo that batch of blood to make it more red. And like one of the things we were working with is Tony, the lighting designer, who did an absolutely excellent job. He uses a lot of side light and a lot of greens on stage, which makes things look a little bit eerier than they normally would. But it also like takes any kind of red and makes it brown. So the purpley kind of blood would have been great on a normal like top lit amber light show. But then dealing with the light, we kind of had to add like even more red to it to make sure that it would stand out and not look brown on stage versus the actual like bright blood red it looks like now.
Andrew explains that creating realistic effects involves building on audience expectations.
I think some of it's convention. Somebody tried something like, ooh, that sounds cool, and everybody else starts using it, and after a while it just becomes trope. Punches are a good example. If you watch a punch in a film, you actually hear kind of like the air whistling as the fist goes, and then it's sounds pretty impressive. But in fact, a punch really doesn't sound anything like a film punch at all, but we all accept it for what it is.
Theatrical effects are especially difficult, in Emmy's opinion, because there's only one chance to get it right. No matter how effective a particular effect might be, execution is key.
It doesn't always go well. We have the problem where, you know, it's partially, you know, relying on the actor to make sure that they do it right every time. And for the most part, it's pretty reliable. Nothing has burst on stage when it shouldn't. So I'm very thankful for that because that's definitely happened to me before. But it's just dependent on the actor, trusting your actors, and I do very much. They're highly qualified to die on stage, I suppose.
When actors and effects are in sync, the results can take a good show to another level of realism.
I think it adds like a whole new element to a show, especially if you're not going in it expecting there to be that much like blood and gore. And I think when it's tastefully done, it really like amps up a show. So I'm actually looking forward to doing it again.
For Cafe Indiana, I'm Sheila Raghavendran. On a gathering storm comes a tall, handsome man in a dusty black coat with a red right hand.
Sheila Raghavendran is a sophomore at Indiana University and a native of Cincinnati. A media school major, Sheila has been involved with the podcast American Student Radio for about a year. Although she's never tried chocolate-flavored stage blood, she is a big fan of chocolate chip ice cream.